Now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's time for the only area radio show devoted exclusively to football. That is to say, soccer.
Local MLS, Premier League, and international.
It's Blokes on the Bench, and you can reach us at 434-284-9470 or at facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Now here's your host, Andy Richardson.
Charlottesville, we're back. Blokes on the Bench, obviously, and with me today is
Alex Goma,
Mark Kaufman.
So it's been an incredibly busy week, really, but obviously the news this morning that broke regarding the Fiorentina
player, yeah, absolutely horrible. Davide Astori dies in his sleep. Said there was a sudden illness, which...
I think heart attack? I think it was something.
I mean, we can only speculate what it was. Heart attack could be it. I mean, it could also be that he vomited in his sleep and choked on it. Like that. Anyway, we have no idea what happened.
Too much knocky?
Uh-huh. Not appropriate, Mark, but...
Sorry.
Gnocchi.
Go ahead.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, it was just absolutely horrible. They postponed the games that were supposed to be today, and it's, you know, the worst thing that can happen in the community of football and soccer when someone goes down. He was 31 years old. He was the captain for Fiorentina and played for Italy as well.
Yeah.
And so Conte was extremely emotional. Yeah. in the pregame run up to the game against City today, and. You know, you could argue that maybe...
Rightfully so.
Yeah, I totally understand why he was so emotional, but at the same time, his head wasn't there, and you could argue that maybe he didn't make the right moves at the right time in that game, because really he probably should have brought on Morata or Giroud probably about...
Earlier.
15 to 20 minutes earlier than he did. And
I thought the City goal was kind of garbage.
I mean, it was all right. But, I mean, you know, a result, regardless of whether... I mean,
they dominated the game. They deserve the victory for sure.
I don't doubt that. You know, I've had to see my team play City twice in a week, and clearly we got bombarded.
Well, Chelsea
I can't say anything about that, but I was in Richmond watching the first half of the City-Chelsea game, and when... Chelsea scored, I was like, or I'm sorry, when City scored, I was like, it's kind of a garbage goal.
Yeah, but they had 70%+ of the possession.
Whatever.
Chelsea didn't have a shot on goal. I mean, it was mostly played in the midfield, and it was not the prettiest of games. It's not the kind of thing you would expect from City. I think they definitely respected Chelsea in that they, you know, and Chelsea legitimately played... I mean, they did not play very well overall, but like at the back, at least they were strong. But I mean, really, it was just a kick around.
Do you think Chelsea are losing it?
And by losing it, I think that they will not be in the top four. So no. I think if you're a Chelsea supporter, I mean, they're not in the top four right now. They're 5 points back from Spurs with 53, Spurs and 58, United 59, Liverpool 60, and Man City running away with it with 78. I think Chelsea have looked poor since basically the new year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. There seems to be some discord between Conte.
I think it's probably because Conte wants to leave.
Well, I don't know if Conte necessarily wants to leave. I think that Abramovich and Chelsea, like the board there, want him to leave, but they don't want to pay him huge money to leave. So they're almost waiting for him to quit, and he's legitimately got millions of dollars on the table. He's not going to leave, and honestly, I mean, they're not playing so bad that really he should be gone. I don't think that just because you're 5 points back on fifth that you should be going when you're not really buying the players that they need. You know, Danny Drinkwater is not going to be the answer for Chelsea, nor is Giroud. I like him, but he's not like that guy that you need. Morata was a decent buy, but he hasn't really played as well as he should have of late. Seems to only be able to score with his head. You know, I think that Chelsea have a lot of work to do in terms of keeping Hazard this summer. I wouldn't be surprised if he went somewhere else.
I said this months ago, like, Morata, like, maybe in a couple years, but just not proven. Like, to spend that much money on a striker.
But he's,
like,
I mean, not proven. He's played in, he's played for Juve. He's played for.
He's been a fringe player at Juve and at Madrid. Like, he is not, he has not been their bread and butter.
He was not playing week in and week out in the league. He was for Juventus a few years ago. He was also making some really big, goals in the Champions League for both teams over the years. He's scored when it matters, but he hasn't had big minutes, and you know maybe that's starting to wear on him physically. Right. You know, we can only speculate.
All right, so let's. I mean, we kind of sidetracked from the.
Well, I mean, my thing. Hold on, my thing with Morata, like he's been a fringe player at big clubs, but he's never been your out and out starter.
Right.
So to spend that much money, like I think there's a reason why he hasn't been an out and out starter. You know, like,
yeah, but has Lukaku been better?
That's a very fair point.
I think
Andy's like, I don't know.
Andy,
like,
that's on you, right?
Here's the thing about Lukaku is that there was all this talk about him being sort of a minnow league team kind of goal scorer, and I think there was a part to that. However, his physique. He got really bulky and slow on the ball. All this talk about, okay, he's up front by himself and nobody's helping. But even when people were passing the ball down the sides and up the middle, he was missing it. Like, he was two steps behind everyone else. And I think, that was pointed out around about November, Christmas. You know, this guy's getting really bit bulky. Maybe he should lay off the weights and stick to the treadmill. And I think
he's lost his quickness.
Well, he did. That's what I'm saying. He did. But I think he has unbulked, slimmed down. I don't know what you want to call it. He's definitely got a little bit more in shape. He's not the striker build.
Yeah.
And I think that's his reason.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, everyone's so negative about Lukaku. Sixth in the league, tied for really fifth, you should say, with 13 goals. Tied with Robert Firmino and Jamie Vardy. No one's really saying that those guys are having poor seasons. Really, what it was is Lukaku got off to such a hot start. But he was scoring, he was scoring in games when it was already decided, or it was like big ones early on, and then he's had a pretty big drought. He did score last week,
right against Chelsea, and you can't really argue.
Yeah, against his old club. Yeah,
but yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that, but think about it like this: like when Chelsea were at the helm of the Premier League in the Mourinho years, Drogba didn't score a ton of goals. You know what I'm saying? Like, Drogba, like, was not winning Gold Boot. Like, he was not doing that. So
I'm going to check the tape on that one. He had to have won at least one Golden Boot, right, Drogba?
This year's definitely the year of the midfielder.
Maybe, but you know what I'm saying, though? Like, when you play in a Mourinho system, like, even if you're the main striker, you're not scoring 35 goals a year.
Right.
You know, like you're scoring maybe 20. They're important, and it's just different. So
Drogba did win Golden Boot in 2009, 2010 for Chelsea. Yeah, he's not a striker for sure.
But that is when Mourinho was not the coach then.
Right. What I was going to say, Mark, though, is this: I think this year strikers are kind of being overshadowed by midfielders and how good they are.
Yeah, like Salah,
De Bruyne.
I mean, I think Hazard. Salah, like, unquestionably, is the best player in the Prem right now.
Oh yeah, I agree.
I mean, yes, for being a winger, he seems to take every chance he gets. It's almost like, I mean, I watch every Spurs match. Kane has squandered a good number of chances of late, where now they're both Salah and Kane are tied at 24 goals. Kane could have a lot more. I mean, but you can't. I mean, look what Kane's done the last 24 months plus or whatever it is in the Premier League. I don't, you know, it's you know, you'd have to rank it up there with some of the best, you know, long stretches of time ever for any player. I mean, he beat Shearer's record for most goals in a calendar year. I mean,
right?
That this guy's legit. So, I mean, yeah, fair enough.
He's
Robert
still
Firmino.
Not Thierry Henry.
We have it up right now in terms of Golden Boots. Thierry Henry won three of them in succession: 2003, through 2006. He also won in 2001, 2002. So Thierry Henry with four Golden Boots. Kane has had two in the last 2 years. He could get a third. You know,
right. But think about it this way. Like, the league is not nearly as defensive as it used to be. Like, so Henry did this back in the days when players got elbowed and, you know, things we see now, you're like, okay, Henry, how many times? You said four?
Four times, yeah.
Four times. That's when they actually played defense.
I mean, they were playing.
Before everyone switched to, you know,
I don't know.
Three at the back, and say what you want. you just want to champion your boy.
I'm actually gonna be positive on Thierry Henry here and say the reason that Thierry Henry is more impressive is twofold. One, obviously, he did twice as many as Kane, and more importantly, he's winning titles when he's doing it.
All right, we need to get back on track,
wait,
here, guys.
Wait,
so
can we get that recorded?
It's being recorded. We need to move on. So before the games, we obviously had FA Cup game Spurs. VAR was introduced, and it caused a lot of controversy. Not to mention, by the way, the game they didn't use the yellow ball, and so it became hard to watch because there was snow everywhere.
It was snow; you could barely see the ball. And there was a lot of snow. I mean, the field was getting covered. They had to clear out the field at halftime, and even then, you know, it was snowing so much by midway through the second half, you could barely see the lines on the pitch.
Okay, so you obviously were watching the game, right?
Yeah, of course.
So what did you make of VAR?
I mean, you can't be confident, and I think that you have to say with VAR is the big decision this week is that it's going to be in the World Cup.
Yeah. And it's going to stay as well. They're going to bring it in. I'm not sure if they're bringing it in at the start of the 18-19 season.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the exact details there, but it's... I know the Champions League won't have it next year, which is kind of interesting that we're diverging.
That they can do it, like...
Champions League will not have it. Anyway, World Cup will. Champions League will not next year. And Andy's saying that maybe or maybe not Premier League will have it. So there were a number of goals that were disallowed up for... debate on whether or not the right decision was made. Spurs had two goals that were disallowed that you could argue should have been goals. It doesn't give you a lot of confidence going into the World Cup, having seen that. It also caused a lot of delays in the game.
Right, and I also noticed when the referee is by himself, he has to make those decisions by himself. And yes, I think that if it's really questionable or if the referee has second doubt, maybe somebody's watching it and given a split second decision from watching it. However, there became a point in that game where literally every decision was being turned to VAR. It's almost like, okay, I'm just here overseeing the game. I'm not actually making decisions. And, you know, I think that's where it's going to come, where VAR becomes a crutch.
Well, you know, it certainly seemed like in that game, and there were goals that were taken. The first goal that Lamela scored, I'm still not even sure what they called there. Maybe a foul on Uente? I mean, it was very bizarre. It wasn't called on the field. I feel like they're almost like creating fouls out of thin air, really, you know, which would never have been called in the past, where a referee, you know, what is a foul inside of the box? It's a little bit more generally, especially when there's a goal scored. There's more of that judgment call there, but it seemed as though when it went in the hands of VAR, it's almost like they're reading from the rule book a little too directly, and then it was just unclear exactly what's going to happen. And it's like you almost get refereed two different ways. You get refereed by the ref in kind of that more judgmental way, and then you have the VAR coming in with like the strict rules of the book. And it just made for a very disjointed game. He used it as a crutch, no doubt. And it was, Spurs ended up 6-1 winning it. It wasn't really ever in doubt. But
Spurs players were like disgraceful, you know. I mean, I caught the highlights of the game. I didn't watch the full game. In terms of how long between each decision, I mean, obviously it varies, but I mean, we're talking 2 minutes, 3 minutes? I mean,
we're talking minutes.
Really, not seconds, minutes.
Minutes. Some of them were quicker than others, but we were just kind of sitting around looking at each other, and then it wasn't very clear. I felt like the referee wasn't very... this is one VAR kind of scenario that happened. There was a foul on Trippier, which the ref called it outside of the box. VAR then moved it into a penalty. Son is then taking the penalty and kind of does that stop-start thing. And he disallows the goal and gives him a yellow card. It was because he stop-started. It was just a very bizarre whole sequence of events. I mean, it's just The whole game was very odd
the
to
thing,
me.
The thing
and I'm a VAR supporter.
But it's getting hard to defend when it gets
exactly,
to that level.
Exactly. When you see that and it's your team and it's like, you know, you've got skin in the game.
Here's the thing, though. We're talking about this on another station, how, you know, when a goal goes in and everyone's sitting around waiting for whether or not it's going to be a goal and it takes a minute and then it's like, yeah, it's given. But then you've lost the...
As a fan, you know,
jumping up and down. You just, oh, yeah, it's a goal. Brilliant. Okay, well, it's been allowed, everyone.
You definitely take a lot out of it. And this is what people were saying beforehand. Watching American sports, it doesn't seem to really affect the NFL as badly because it has that kind of stop-start already built into it. But with football, with soccer, it's more of a flowing game. And you just cut it off. It's like all of a sudden there's like, you get those water breaks with like the humidity and temperature things sometimes. And those are okay because you know they're coming. But this is like, at any moment, you may be just sitting around for the next little bit while you're waiting for some guy that you can't even see. You don't even know where he is. You can't cut to video. At least in the NFL now, you can see what they're looking at and you can kind of get a sense of what's going on. I like that. I hope that they can institute that in the World Cup so you know what they're seeing, and then there's more of a
maybe the fact it's in Russia this year. You know, all the controversy revolving around that. But I mean, like, as an England fan, it takes you back to Frank Lampard
when he scored the goal that was
Germany, right?
Where it hit off the crossbar and in, and then it didn't, but then they didn't
maybe
count.
Let's go a little bit further back when England beat Germany in the 66 World Cup.
There was,
and no one knew it.
Or Diego Maradona and the hand of God.
Peter Shilton.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, VAR, there's been some huge decisions that wouldn't have happened. I've actually also heard that the Zidane headbutt of Materazzi in the World Cup final, they actually saw the replay on the big board. The fourth official told the ref to give him a red. But if there was no replay in the stadium, they would never have seen that, and there would never have been a red card. Even though it was obviously deserved.
If that was 1962, with no boards around the stadium, Zidane would have been fine.
All right, so let's get back to VAR then.
Just saying.
Your ultimate thoughts on VAR?
I want to see more of a sample size.
So, I mean, do you think the World Cup is that sample size, or is that too big a stadium?
It's scary to know that.
Too big a tournament. Even.
My problem with VAR is that they haven't figured it out. I know they do it in Germany, and they do it in other leagues. It's about how you implement it. And so if they can implement it the correct way, where the stoppages are less than a minute, and it's much quicker. But like in some leagues, like the referee himself has to go over and look at the video. He has to run to half to midfield to look at, and there's a screen that pops up. If they do that, it's gonna be absolutely horrible. So I don't know exactly how they're going to implement it. I just know that they are implementing it, and the methodology and the procedure that they follow is going to be very important to the quality of the game.
The one thing that annoyed me about VAR bringing in the FA Cup was, yes, I know you have to start it sometime, and is there really a game that the FA Cup means so much, but a lot of people are saying that it's, you know, losing its kind of prestige, and so this, you know, kind of ruined that game in a way, you know.
Well, and what kills me is it's not even in every game. It's like they just hand select certain games to implement it. So some games have it, some games don't.
Right.
It's all luck of the draw, which, in a way, VAR is just that.
Exactly. All right, guys, the time is coming up to 20 past 6. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. All right, so we've been sidetracked this whole show to start with. So let's talk about the Arsenal-Man City game. Us two. Mark has left the room for a minute. Here he's back.
He's coming back.
He's back just in time, Mark. Arsenal versus Man City. Thursday game. You thought you were getting away with this, but you're not.
Man City 3, Arsenal 0.
0.
It's like deja vu, right? I mean, it was every Arsenal supporter's nightmare. I mean, once again, we looked good for about maybe 10 minutes, and we got beat 3-0.
Comprehensive, or did you think that it was a fair scoreline? Were you... And any positives you can get out of this?
No.
I mean, Aubameyang missed a penalty. That was a really weak penalty, I thought.
It was awful. I don't know why Rambo didn't take it. But honestly, at that point, even if we had scored the penalty, game is still over. That's the problem.
It was definitely against the run of play, even. Yeah. But Sané in this game was just amazing. He was all over the place, I thought.
No, it's funny. Like, you're just pulling this highlight up, right? So, like, I'm at Shabin watching the game on Thursday with a guy who was like, I'm a Stoke City fan, but I'm also a Man City fan. I'm like, how does that work out? But literally...
Well, Stoke aren't very good, so you have to be a fan of the number one's team. You know?
I kind of have a soft spot for Watford.
Front runner?
So.
Front runner? Kind of, maybe?
Definitely.
All right, so...
But Sané, I mean, was just absolutely insane in this game. Back and forth, zigzagging through everybody.
You didn't let me finish.
Let him finish.
Can I finish?
Right before that happened, I'm talking to this supporter, and I'm like, we were talking about Salah for whatever reason. And I was like, Salah has the like Leo Messi-esque like ability to run at players, and I was like, this guy, Leroy Sané, he's also got it. And then literally, 2 seconds later,
boom,
Bernardo. Like, gets it to Bernardo. Bernardo just, like, buries us. And I'm just like, man, like, why did I have to...
Support this team. I know.
No.
Honestly.
I mean, with the delay of the satellite, it's not like you said and then it happened.
Right.
It happened already.
Coming at you, baby girl.
Now I understand why Wenger has that big long jacket, so he can just hide himself in it like a little sausage.
He can't drink a water bottle. Like,
he was always get smashed, right?
It looks like he was feeding the pigeons today because he was like breaking something up and throwing it on the ground. I'm thinking, oh, here we go. Sad old man on a bench.
Yeah, he is that sad old
feeding
man.
The ducks
that feeds
in the pond,
the
right?
Like,
well, maybe he's getting ready for retirement, you know? Which I think we have to say.
It's probably imminent.
Is it imminent? Mark, do you wait another year to do this, or you say he's got to go end of the year? Or end of the season, I should say.
Okay. At any other club, he gone.
He gone.
At any other club,
I mean, any other club, he would have already have been gone.
Right.
And let him retire in grace.
Right. Hey, Tottenham Hotspur fan, calm your face. You asked for my opinion, now you're just running your mouth.
Right. It's just too... I just get so excited talking about how Arsenal's so poor nowadays. Four losses in a row.
Get the popcorn on it. It's just,
I mean, how long have you been poor?
For what? Like losses in a row?
No, like how long has Tottenham been forever in our shadow?
Well, you haven't been in the shadow for a while. Haven't been in the shadow.
You got 1 year, baby girl?
I don't think you guys are going to be above us this year either.
We probably won't. That'll be, what, two times in how many years?
Okay, we need to...
What's your trophy case look like?
We're talking to you, Mark. This is an intervention for you.
Yeah, we're talking about Arsenal.
An intervention.
Yes.
Are you going to start supporting Man City?
It's sad looking at your little...
Noel Gallagher is a Man City fan. It definitely makes it easier.
It's sad looking
at
your little
face. And my boy Christian. Christian, we love you. Sorry you're sick today.
Yeah, I hope you're feeling better.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're talking...
I could cheer on City.
Stop deflecting it on the other people.
Wenger out? Yes or no?
You didn't let me finish.
Well, we're
you
not
didn't even
you finish
let me start.
All right.
So here it
Mark's
is.
Mark's fighting in the studio. Cool.
Yes or no?
He would be gone at any other club.
Right.
So Stan Kroenke, our owner, doesn't care about trophies. He just wants Arsenal to be a profit, right?
I've been saying this for years.
And you're right, Mr. Financial.
Go on.
Okay.
Is he gone or is he... Come on, answer the,
no,
answer the question.
I say he's gone, but then now you're saying he's going to stay, it sounds like.
Okay, my answer to your question, 100% directly,
yes.
The question you asked me, he's not gone. Because Kroenke doesn't care about this club. The only thing Kroenke cares about is if it turns a profit. So as long as this club is turning a profit, he doesn't care who the manager is. And that's why we need to murder him.
I was listening to an interview, and I do not agree with anything this idiot says, but Piers Morgan.
He's such an idiot, and he's a...
Well, we won't.
I'm not going to get into it.
Yeah, you're not.
I'm not going to get any further.
Not on air. Anyway, I do agree with him. He was saying his like 17-year-old son, his whole family are Arsenal fans. His 17-year-old son doesn't remember a successful Arsenal club. Doesn't remember the Invincibles. I mean, that's how long ago that was.
2000 what?
And also,
it's a distant galaxy far, far away now. I mean, and he... here's what I want to say. So Kroenke doesn't care about our success. He just bought the club. All he cares about is if at the end of the day, when he gets his W-2s for the club, that we're in, that we're
they don't have W-2s
profit.
In England. This is the same guy that owns the Rams.
You know what I'm saying?
And he
Come
moved
on.
The Rams from St. Louis to L.A., obviously for money reasons. He's a good businessman. I respect him in that regard. I don't think he wants to be a winner, though. And that's the same thing you could say for a lot of the American owners.
Well, he owns
American
the Rams,
owners.
So he's clearly not a winner.
About the owners from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I forget their name, the Glazers.
Yeah, the United owners.
They own United. The owners for Liverpool are the boss of the Fenway, whatever. They see on the Red Sox.
They're perennial losers.
So, and you look at...
It's their year mark next year.
But you look at the teams that have won recently.
What,
it's Chelsea,
Liverpool or Boston?
No, but
neither.
Come on. Neither, yeah, neither.
The clubs that have won recently are owned by people that have money that they're just throwing around. Roman Abramovich, oligarch, Russia, all the negative things
it's
you can
all,
think of.
It's all money. That your club is yeah. exactly the same. They're just holding off and then selling on. Right?
Manchester City is owned by
basically a country.
Or basically a country.
Abu Dhabi.
By Abu Dhabi. They've basically made a mockery of the financial fair play. They also own PSG, the same country, you know, organization, basically. They've taken over football, and they've made it so much about money and about profit and about buying players at hyperinflated prices, it's killing the game.
There's a documentary about the inaugural season of NYCFC, and the gentleman who was at the game today, was it Monsieur, I don't know anything.
Yeah, he's like the...
But his kind of assistant guy, the guy that does all the talking. It's okay. Not him, but I, you know what? I'll have to look him up. I don't know his name. But he was in this documentary, and they basically had a room full of Manchester City and the new New York City club all talking about what they were going to do. And they were saying, basically, we want to be the best in all our leagues. Because they had just opened, yeah. I guess, Sydney in Australia. That's Sydney FC as well. They want to be a global yeah. brand.
Well, City. They own Girona.
Right.
City Group.
Right.
They own Girona.
And I think Alex brings up a good point. This hyperinflation of players, like, it's ridiculous. 5 years ago, you know, you'd have this player. I mean, even look at when Ronaldo went to Madrid. From Manchester. So Ronaldo goes from Manchester to Madrid for how much money? Like,
it was about
less than Paul Pogba. Pogba
yeah, for sure.
Is
like, it was about 90 million like, euros, maybe a little less than that.
Like,
but Paul that's a
Pogba,
lot. That, it'd be, the thing that's crazy is
that was
the Ronaldo
almost 10 years ago.
Went 10 years ago, and it took a long. It took until Gareth Bale moved, which was probably about 5 years ago now,
for them to make
for
that
it to be eclipsed.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I mean, it's crazy money. I remember like back in like the early days of the Premier League, sort of 94, 95. I'm not sure 100% if it was Alan Shearer, but somebody got moved for like, I think it was like $4 million, and everyone was like, oh, you know, $4 million, you know.
Yeah,
crazy.
But you can directly link the amount of money people pay for players to the revenue of
TV rights. Yeah.
So the TV rights have gone exponentially through the roof. Although with the latest deal that England just had in Premier League, it actually stayed semi...
Does that worry you, by the way?
No. Okay, so it actually went up because they added more games. They added a bunch of Saturday night games.
Yeah.
But it went...
And they're
going
to bring it up.
But on a per-game
well.
Basis, it went down. So if you're the Premier League and you're... This may have plateaued or maybe even peaked. And so that's probably a good thing from a money perspective. It'll be interesting to see if China continues to funnel in crazy money.
I think there's
money.
Something the government are stepping in on that.
They banned and said you could only have three foreign players, I believe. So you could still put in crazy money for somebody.
Well, you just have to buy Pogba, Salah, yeah. You know, you just have to go after
them. And I think that they also did, I'm not sure if they're doing a financial fair play, but I think that there's something there to kind of prevent them from just going all in. For players and just throwing around money because it's all with debt in China. Anyway, we don't need to get into all that. But
No.
In China, the way that everything is funded is through debt, and then it's ultimately owned by the state. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with China as a whole if their economy were to cool or whatever. I mean, like this would hit the clubs. This would hit really the whole global economy.
But one thing I wanted to ask you about the TV rights is, does it concern you that in the U.S., like, we don't really, I don't really know how much revenue is the Premier League profitable for NBC? You know, could BN Sport or Fox Sport come in?
I would say it's gotta be.
Because I'll tell you, Fox Sport bought the Premier League, it would be the death of it again.
I would be okay with literally anybody buying it, so long as they offered a gold package. A package where you could watch every game.
I want it to be on TV.
I'm not saying it's necessary.
I want it to be on TV. I don't.
No,
the option for like the extra games.
I think when NBC first took over the Premier League, I thought it was great. And you could stream any game, you know, like.
It was great. I mean, it still is great. I mean, you could argue that Goal has.
I mean, you have to get the package.
You could argue that Goal has pulled them back a bit, but I think they're searching for that profitability that you're talking about.
Right. I just feel like if it went over to Fox, that.
Oh, we don't want to get
cheap studios.
Yeah,
but, one or two games again.
But Fox does own the Champions League, and you can get the match pass and watch every Champions League game if you want to. So there.
But that's not every weekend, and it's not 10 games over.
But the whole point is that they have a streaming option, which.
But it's still overpriced at the minute. I mean, just for that.
Yeah, for that, it's $20 a month, which is crazy. It's $20 a month. Which is in the gold package?
Fox to go.
I'm talking about the Fox match pass, which you have to get for Champions League is $20 a month. If you just get Fox Go or whatever, if you have a cable subscription,
Fox 1 and 2, and I get most of the games.
If you get,
But
then I'm watching Spurs, and if they're not on any channel, I'm buying it for a month.
Little violin.
All right, well, baby girl, here's the thing. So I will say, I like that. NBC has taken over the Premier League. But I do think we have to give props to Fox. I don't want to. Fox Soccer Channel.
Like
Fox Soccer Channel. Back in the day.
Brought it, like, they brought it
over here, and it was based out of Canada.
Okay.
HTS was so, I started watching.
I do find it interesting, however, the gold package thing, how that's kind of turned around. Because do you remember at the start of the season, it wasn't just everyone in the studio.
Right.
It was people waiting until their team rolled around and then buying it. And people going, oh, I don't really know. I don't like it. But
I mean,
when you get into it, I think it's actually good.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that when I first started watching this game that we love in 2004, 2005, you know, reacclimating myself to this culture, Fox was it. Fox wasn't even Fox Sports.
Yeah, there was no
Fox
money in it,
channel.
And that's fine. And we should give Fox their due for being the trailblazers. That's awesome. That said, it's going to be up for grabs, and you know, yay capitalism. Who knows who's going to have it? And all I want is make sure that they have that.
Okay.
That streaming
this
package.
Then. Do you think that the quality of the announcers, the analyst pundits, is the same? I don't think it is. I NBC hit the nail on the head.
I like that Warren guy. I think that Warren
Barton.
Yeah. Warren Barton. I think he's decent.
Kitty Abdu.
Yeah, hello.
He's fairly ragdaff.
No, but I mean, what I care about more than what they talk about in the studio is, and which this is what Fox does, which kills me.
Coverage.
Is Fox will have people that are here in the U.S. commentating on Champions League games
in a studio
in the U.S. and not actually being physically there,
right.
And they have no idea what they're watching. They're seeing the same thing we are. They don't even know when it's been offsides. Oh, is that a goal? I think it was. It's really, really poor. So if they just leave the English commentators to do their game, I think it's fine. But I think they try and over. Kind of like make it American by Ronaldo's going to be
doing
this.
Appealing to an American audience.
Yeah, but I don't think people care who the announcer is.
But I mean, you are right. The quality of
I shouldn't say that because here I am complaining
the
about
play by plays. Like Arlo White to me is probably the best play by play.
But he hasn't commentated on a game.
No, he
in
hasn't
because like
he's
couple
been,
months.
He's taken over from
Rebecca.
Is she back soon? I don't know what's going on there.
I don't know.
So. Ugh, Mark.
They have that other dude who I actually kind of like, who's commentating.
No.
The new play-by-play guy who's English, who's pretty good. He does a decent number of the
as
of the English
As long
as
Ray
games.
Hudson is not involved in any of this, I am very, very good.
Okay,
the one that's like magical, messy.
His similes.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
It's
the BN Sports guy.
Like,
he's out of control.
Like,
He's out of control.
He comes up with these like metaphors and similes that you're just like,
must be a postman because he delivers.
Yeah.
The only thing.
No, that's actually pretty regular.
The normally, only thing I kind of like really about him is that he starts talking and you're like, this sentence makes absolutely no sense, but he somehow ties it into a nice little bow right at the end. Not as though it's a great bow, but he does tie it up and it's.
Magisterial Messi.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he's so on there.
Exactly. Yeah. He's hilarious, I think. I don't think he actually does great analysis, but from just a entertainment perspective, I love it.
Right. I think he's a professional alcoholic. Like, okay. I've looked at his wiki page. Like.
Ridding and slitting. Here we go, Mark. Okay, so let's move on to the games because we need to get to the games. All right,
well,
so Burnley versus Everton. Burnley versus Everton.
Burnley versus Everton.
This was the early game on Saturday. Everton didn't look. Actually, you know what? This was kind of a crazy game. Everton start off, get one goal up by through the first goal for that new guy that they signed in January, Cenk Tosun, and it was a nice little header. But then Burnley claw back at home. I mean, apparently Burnley had never, and I'm not, I was interested to know the stat that they were saying. I couldn't get it down. But they were saying during the game that basically Burnley hadn't scored more than two goals at home and that they'd never come back from one down under Sean Dyche or something like that, which is like a crazy stat. Considering they were fourth at one point. Either way, Burnley come back, score two. The first one was a nice, really nice ball by Loughton up to Barnes, who they were talking about beforehand.
Beautiful. Cool.
About he may be playing, even though he was born in Bath, he may be playing for Austria, an international call-up, which would be the first time for him being 30, so good on him if that happens. And then Chris Wood gets the second one on a corner kick where Ashley Williams is just... I don't know what he's doing in the back post. He's just sitting there looking like a fool. He didn't mark him. He's playing zone. He didn't mark him. He didn't play the man. He didn't play the zone. Chris Wood gets an easy header. And then moments later, Ashley Williams, probably still not so happy about that, gets a red card on a corner going the other way. Throws an arm towards the Burnley player and match over at that point. Really disappointing result for any Everton fans. They were booing the team off the
field.
The
Big Sam effect is kind of wearing off a little bit.
Well, this is what Big Sam has said. We're good at home. We need to be better on the road, which is what he said. And then that's what he said before the game, and that's exactly how it played out.
All right, guys. The time
we
is
all know
20.
Bert, we all
the
know.
Time is now 20 past 7. We'll be 20 past 7. 20 past 6.
No,
thank
40,
you. Mark.
40.
40.
Burnley's the top place to play.
All right. The time is now coming up to 6:40. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. We figured out what time it is now.
Apparently, it's 20 to 7 is one way to say it. If you want to say 20, you got to do 20 to 7.
Okay.
We're on English.
It's 20
time.
Past 9.
We're on English time. Gotcha. So.
All right, so next game, Watford versus West Brom. Troy Deeney.
Troy Deeney with a nice Chipperuski. 1-0.
A Chipperuski. Maybe you should go work for Fox or...
Yeah. Move aside Ray Hudson or whatever his name is. I'm coming in.
I think Greggy would do a better job than Ray
Messi
Hudson.
With a Chipperuski.
You don't say Chipperuski. I say Chipperuski.
What's up, bro? Brewski.
I'd rather listen to Greggy than Ray Hudson, 100%.
I was
like
messaging.
Like,
obviously, he's a new father. Congratulations on little Connor. But
Connor.
He's tired. But he was saying that he's looking forward to next weekend. I'm not.
Next weekend is what for the listeners?
Manchester United versus Liverpool.
Oh,
I'm
looking forward to it as well.
Not only will
where are we watching the game, blokes?
If City, when City play United at the Etihad, what are you guys mumbling? There are like two little girls in here just mumbling to themselves.
Baby girl.
Yeah, you like when United play City, that will be the decider. If everything keeps going the way they are, if City win at home against United, they'll win the league. However, next weekend could decide between who's second, because Liverpool obviously are second.
I don't think it'll be decided next weekend. I do think it'll obviously go a long way towards it.
I mean, we'll be playing home advantage, and we beat you guys at home, Chelsea at home. Obviously, City beat us, but
who didn't see City build? I mean, come on. Other than Liverpool, obviously.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think Liverpool might just
right now. Liverpool 60 points. United 59.
Right, but we play tomorrow.
But a game in hand.
We play Crystal Palace tomorrow.
Which, that should be a win. If that's not a win, we got major problems.
To the point, when you say that, you're rolling your eyes a bit. You have to think about it.
I mean, Palace are one of the more interesting teams.
Yeah, you mean by interesting, you mean like relegated, right?
I mean that they, I mean, based on their start, they should be relegated because they didn't get a single point.
Mark, no more cheerleaders. Mark's obsessed with Crystal Palace because they've got cheerleaders.
We get him in every week. Thanks, Andy, for you being the guy that says it this week.
Right. I know. Well, you know, why not stop a tradition?
I'm not obsessed. I just think it's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, tomorrow we play.
It should be a good game because Crystal Palace always play up to the level of their competition. Maybe not all. Maybe always is a little strong of a word. They sometimes play up to the level of their competition. It could be a good one. And usually it's one of those where it's back and forth, usually in like the last 30 minutes. So it should be a good one. That said, United should run away with this. If they don't, you're not happy as a United supporter.
No. No. All right, so moving on to the next game. Spurs versus Huddersfield.
Old Sonny.
Go ahead, baby girl.
Sonny with a couple of nice goals here. You know, there could have been plenty more, but we'll focus on the positives here.
Spurs, of course.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, they won, unlike, you know, some of the other squads that are
Everyone
represented by people
Arsenal?
Here. Yeah.
Wait till you built that stadium.
So what's beautiful here is that you know, Kane, he may not be scoring in... Well, he scored last week. I mean, let's not be too harsh. I mean, he didn't score in this game. But he starts it off with a nice chest down of a ball right to Ali, who puts a great through ball to Son, who kind of works his magic, goes left, goes right. All of a sudden, there's a left-footed shot to the in the side netting. It was a really nice goal that was well taken. And then Kane got the assist on the second one with a nice searching ball into the box, which, I mean, it's like the vision that he has is he's probably the best passer on the team from a percentage perspective. I mean, total volume, you're going to see more assists, obviously, from Ali, Dele Ali, and, of course, Eriksen as well. But it seems like every time that Kane gets the ball, nothing negative happens. It's just always positive. Eriksen's been a little bit up and down this year, not playing the best of his game the last couple of weeks. Ali, obviously, has been scoring as much. But overall, you have to be happy with the way Spurs are playing. You know, they crushed Rochfield in the midweek in the FA Cup replay, which is somewhat concerning. They had to replay against them, but you know, they keep on marching on. They have a decently easy draw in the FA Cup, but then Spurs, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. They at this point they're 5 points up on Chelsea for the fourth spot for Champions League. It'll be very interesting to see how the rest of the year plays out.
All right. I wanted to ask you about Spurs and Dele Alli. There's been a lot of talk over the last few weeks about him kind of having
diving,
this,
I'm guessing. Is that where this is going?
This European style of diving, and he essentially has emulated that and perfected it. What are your views on Dele Alli?
Well, if you watch any game from other teams, they're gonna say that anyone that dives in situations, but goes down easily, perhaps. He definitely has divin, is that a word? He definitely dove in the past. No doubt about that. He's yellow cards.
He's been divin about.
He just divin. No,
I mean, but Jackie Boy dove a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone dives, and if you're not diving, it's sad to say, then you're not really trying to win.
Right.
I mean, it's like cheating. You know, it's like if you're not cheating, you're not trying to win, or whatever they say. I don't think it's cheating necessarily, but I think that he's semi-perfected the art. But I think it's also affected him negatively because he doesn't get calls that he should now because refs know that he goes down easily. And so it's not, I don't think it's actually
worn off of it.
Exactly.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. But I mean, I do feel that it used to be frowned upon more universally in terms of not just the fans but the players and the managers. I feel like now probably managers, you know, if it gets us the win, you know, it's part of the culture. You know, I don't necessarily agree with it, but hey, we're 1-0, we beat them.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens to diving with VAR. And if VAR can...
So what is the current rule though if they get caught diving? Is it a red? And
it's a yellow.
I think if it's in the box where it can be deciding of a game, it should be a red.
What's really weird is
kind of agree with that.
I think there should be retroactive bans. I mean, whether it's a red, I mean, I think that's potentially harsh. The way that they do it now, though, is that you can get a you can get a retroactive ban if you dive and it creates a positive outcome for your club in the Premier League, mm-hmm. which is new this year. It's happened a couple times, not a lot. It actually, I mean, Delhi hasn't been suspended for that or anything like that.
Right. I mean, it's
but
not.
He's been getting yellows because he's been diving. So,
because he's a diver.
Dude, what do you rate? I mean, do you rate him a really good player? I mean,
I think Delhi is top five England player right now, and has the potential to be up there with some of the greats. But at the same time, if you know this year is any indicator, then he won't be up there with some of the greats.
Why? Why do you say that?
Because he's not scoring. He's.
But I mean, are you talking about? You mean this year in the Premier League or this year, meaning the summer, maybe in the World Cup?
I mean this season.
It's funny you're talking about grades in England. Like,
but here's
what have they done?
Here's what I want to ask.
They won World Cups. They've generally
won
World
a
Cup.
World Cup on a questionable call, as we mentioned earlier.
As we talked about earlier, it's fact now.
If Mark says it, it's fact.
I wanted to ask.
Come on. England is one of historically. Year in, year out, one of the top 10 clubs, if not five, not clubs, international
but they're
teams.
They're perennial underachievers.
Yes, that doesn't mean that they're not good. And
so
if you look at the all-time greats of England, I mean, they stack up way better than most other countries.
But I did want to ask you, Alex, about this season. I mean, about this World Cup, because obviously the England squad
Delhi's not starting for England,
is he not? Or
he should be. If he's not starting,
he's got to be a starter.
I mean, you've got to ask Southgate what he's doing.
So it's going to be Kane
up top.
Is Rashford playing, or is it going to be Vardy?
I don't. Well, if you play Vardy, then you're playing
neither
two up top.
One of them are starting. Like,
I would like to see.
You got
to
play Kane with Ali in the hole. Like,
exactly.
But that's what I'm saying.
And then you could put Rashford on one of the wings. That's fine, because I think that the best play for England is probably a 4-2-3-1.
But they don't. I mean, they do. Here's the traditional way England play. They do
4-2-2 or 4-4-2.
4-4-2, but through the actual. Like warm-ups and the internationals and stuff like that. They beat teams, and then when they get to the World Cup, they start messing up what they should. They should just play 4-4-2 all the time. That's it. Just play 4-4-2. Don't change.
I'm not anti 4-4-2. I don't think that that's I don't think that's the best lineup for them.
It's different now
because it's you don't. It doesn't set you up with enough defense. I think in a 4-4-2. I think you can obviously play a 4-4-2 that, you know, is that way, but what inevitably happens is you don't have enough people in the midfield, particularly in the center of the midfield with the two there, because usually you have one attacking midfielder and one defensive midfielder, and if you come up against a team that has playing that 4-2-3-1 that I was just talking about, they've all of a sudden got three players in the middle of the field, and then they're going to start to boss players that play teams that play a 4-4-2.
But I mean, like, if you look at City, who play that almost diamond shape, it's like five up front, five at the back. Like, I mean, I'm not saying shouldn't play just. I mean, and I'm not saying that you go 4-4-2 all the time. Of course, if you're coming up against European teams that are traditionally been known to kind of like up the ante with regards to like.
But really, what it should be is let's look at the players. Who's in form? If Vardy's in form, let's play two up top. I'm cool with that. I'm totally fine.
That's not going to happen in the modern game, though.
We can say that.
But they do play two up top sometimes.
When you say particularly in form, if you're playing though, against, that doesn't mean anything, because Rooney was in form for a few of the United seasons and played terribly in England in competition.
Yeah, but I think the problem with England is that when they get in these international tournaments, they do one of two things. They either play super conservatively and play not to lose, basically, which inevitably means that you do lose because you're playing this kind of style that you're not used to, or you put players on the field that just don't work with each other. We've seen that with Gerrard and Lampard. They just, for whatever reason, could just never play well in the midfield together.
That was never going to work.
I mean, on paper it works, but in reality it didn't, so...
Life isn't FIFA. Games are not FIFA.
I completely agree.
So Swansea beat West Ham 4-1.
This one was a huge one for Swansea going out of the relegation zone and moving up. I mean, this was...
Can they stay up?
Christian thinks they're good to drop. But then again, we still
have... Swansea are 13th right now. I mean, granted, they're only 3 points above the relegation zone. But it's like, I think Swansea... have kind of hit their stride. They've been playing much better of late. I don't see Swansea going down.
I think Swansea's that team in the Premier League that, like, for whatever reason, like, the last couple years, they're always close to the drop zone. We all think they're getting relegated, and then they're
back. But this year, obviously, with what's his name leaving?
Sigurdsson.
No, coach. Ah, forgotten his name. Manager.
I don't even remember as well.
I've forgotten his name. Anyway, he left. Where's a cop?
Portuguese guy?
No, where's a cop? I've forgotten his... what was his name? This is what happens when you forget... anyway, listen. So what his the manager was traditionally seen as a manager that would save teams. Almost like Big Sam. Bring him in, they won't get relegated. He's been kicked out.
So they started the season with Paul Clement, who came over and saved the day. Then they went to Leo Britton, which basically was like a kind of holdover. And then they have, now they have the Portuguese guy that Mark was just talking about.
Right, yeah.
Carlos Carvajal.
Sorry, I'm getting my teams mixed up.
I think you're getting
your
teams mixed
up. I was talking about West Brom.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was meant to say.
That would explain why we didn't know what you were talking about.
No, exactly. I'm sorry, I was trying to get to West Brom through Swansea, because West Brom are going.
Well, it was just a very poor segue.
It was. West Brom are out.
So West Brom, yeah, they lost to Watford. We spoke about them earlier.
Yeah, there's...
West Brom looks so poor right now. It's just shocking how... I mean, right now they're obviously dead last. 20 points.
Alan Pardew's in charge.
Alan Pardew was supposed to come in and save the day. They're 7 points off the relegation zone. Or off, you know, basically the other ones. Really, they're 8 points out of the being not relegated. West Brom are playing so badly. We need to just...
Tony Pulis was the guy I was talking about for West Brom, not for Swansea.
You mean the rugby coach?
Practically, yeah.
That was a joke, by the way.
I know.
All right, so...
City Rugby Club.
All right, so Southampton versus Stoke was another
Speaking of
draw.
Stoke, 0-0, moving on. Oh, by the way, Buffal missed a huge header at the end of that one. Should have been 1-0 Southampton.
That same right. season.
So Leicester City versus Bournemouth, 1-1.
This one was an amazing game at the end. If you were watching the coverage on NBC or whatever. It went to like 90. It was supposed to be 4+ minutes, but for whatever reason, it went to the 97th minute. And Mahrez had an incredible free kick from distance, bending around the wall. And the goalie, it's like, where the hell is he? You know, it was really disappointing if you're a Bournemouth fan. But Leicester at home, big draw for them.
Well, I mean, Leicester are kind of comfortable this year, right? I mean, they're not obviously in any...
I mean, they're eighth. I mean, what, seventh is where you get to Europe? So
right.
I think that's probably where they want to get.
But here's the thing, though, that at this point, seven, I feel that seven. The fourth, the top four, at least for Champions League, forget the Europa, is too crowded right now. I don't see it. I mean, I think from second to fourth are going to rotate, but, I mean, can you see anybody kind of moving in? Well, maybe Spurs.
I mean, let's be honest. Are you saying, like, who's going to rotate in and out? I never would have thought that Arsenal would be the sixth place team, you know, 3 years after where they were, you know. So anything can happen is the whole point. We don't know what's going to happen. Leicester won the league a few years ago. We never thought that would have happened. You know, we can all speculate, but who knows what's going to happen.
All right, so the other game that was played was Liverpool versus Newcastle.
Yeah, this was the late game on Saturday. Newcastle won that pretty comfortably with a goal from Salah and Mane, I believe.
You mean Liverpool?
That's what we said, Liverpool and Newcastle.
Did I say that?
You said Newcastle.
Sorry, Liverpool won comfortably. Newcastle were not very good.
But, I mean, Mo Salah, we were talking about this earlier on. Like,
right?
See, this is the thing. Now that Coutinho is gone, and everyone was saying about how, with regards to Liverpool, like, you know, they're losing all their best players. I mean... They
basically swapped offense for defense when they brought
which
in
is what they need.
Virgil van Dijk. And that's exactly what they needed to do. I think that if someone's going to give you $150 million for Coutinho, who I think was not worth $150 million, see you later. See you later. Sometimes it's a good time to just do good business.
Well, it's just like what we were talking about earlier. Like, these prices for these players are so jacked up. Like, Coutinho, like, 15 years ago... That's just a regular transfer.
Yeah, I mean...
Right, but part of this was winter, which is usually, like, inflated prices.
Understandable.
But it was the same price that they were that we heard about in the summer. So he wanted to go. Liverpool blocked it. Liverpool changed their mind for some reason.
Well, you can never
Coutinho
let
Coutinho is a good player, but he's not a world-class player.
He is a world-class player.
I think that he has world-class touch and things like that. But in terms of he scores goals
your
from
your former manager
beyond the box.
Would agree with me. He may be world-class. Alex Ferguson said that Gerrard was not a world-class player.
He also said
crazy talk.
Yeah, he got it wrong occasionally.
He did get it wrong.
And I'm talking about Liverpool, an ex-Liverpool player now. I'm telling you, Coutinho was a world-class player.
He did bring up a good point.
I don't think
Coutinho's a world-class player. He's just a notch below. I agree with Alex. He didn't make the Brazilian squad until recently.
Okay. He may be a notch below, but I think now where he is, he may be at that. He may come into that world class.
But I mean, we're talking about a player that went to Barcelona for how much money? Like he better be like 100% world class, like not maybe or maybe making the Brazilian national team. Like
but I mean, like the
we're talking about a player that was skipped over multiple times for call ups,
right?
Even when he was at Liverpool, we're talking about a player that the Brazilian national coach was like, yeah, I don't know if I want to put Coutinho into my side.
But, you know, it's like he's missing something. Obviously, he's not great defense and all that kind of stuff.
All right, guys. That is about it for this week and all the debates that have been going on. At the time, it's now 7 o'clock. We did get to Arsenal. We talked about Arsenal.
We talked about Arsenal briefly, not the result.
You're rubbish. All right. See you next Sunday, guys. Have a great week.
City, go on.
All right, guys. Bye.
You've been listening to Blokes on the Bench with your host Andy Richardson on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. Join us again next Sunday at 6 for another edition and feed us back at facebook.com/blokesonthebench.